Now, here's a very useful tip to begin with. Always read the small print. Otherwise, we may choose to buy something and only realize too late what the full cost is likely to be. One of the dreaded small print words is flat pack. In the showroom, there is the furniture that we want. And having paid the bill, it is a flat pack that we discover that we've bought when we arrive at customer collection. And so the real cost is not just £85, but it's £85 plus 3 hours hard, frustrating labor. And the other telltale smaller print is up to. I'm sure you've recognized that recently, up to 75% off. Now, we shouldn't be naive, we got past that now, but probably when we go into that store, what we really want to buy is 20% off or not in the sale at all. Jesus, on the other hand, Jesus puts the small print in bold print. And you'll see it here in verse 34. Then he called the crowd to him along with his disciples, and he said this, "If anyone would come after me, he must deny himself and take up his cross and follow me." The words of Jesus. Jesus came to the point immediately, and he spelt it out very deliberately. To be a Christian is not a soft option. It is a tough call. We're given a choice. We're completely free to decide to say yes or no to his invitation. And we know right away that if we do choose to come after Jesus Christ, then he said, in effect, "Well, I'm not going to pretend it's easy or it's comfortable." Now, when we hear that, we may respond with a little bit of disappointment. Perhaps we were hoping that Christianity would smooth things out, not create more challenges. If so, then what Jesus said does not sound particularly promising. Well, on the other hand, we may respond by feeling quite heartened. If we mean business in this life, then we do want a challenge. We don't want anything soft. We've had a good reminder of that many people are looking for the hard thing to do in life, to take risks, to go into adventure, to want to achieve. We were thinking just recently of that young man who with his friend was killed out in Chamonix, Rob Gauntlet, who had set himself some tremendous tasks very early in his life. Now, we may not all achieve those things precisely, but there's a lot inside us that actually does not want the soft option. In which case, Jesus' words are extremely encouraging. Because he said, "If anybody would come after me, he must deny himself and take up his cross and follow me." So if that is the cost, what is the draw? What will convince us that this is the life we would choose and the direction we would choose? Well, the first answer to that question is, number one, who Jesus is. Because he is a big name. And you'll see this in verses 27 to 30. Now, you may well have heard the very silly story about the man who obviously saw himself as a big name, totally full of himself. And one night in an expensive restaurant, he began complaining very loudly when he decided the staff simply weren't giving him enough attention. "Do you know who I am?" he thundered at a poor waitress. Publicly humiliated by him, she offered to go and fetch the manager. And he came, and he was given the same treatment. "Do you know who I am?" he shouted. But the manager was not at all intimidated by the man. Instead, he turned to address the other customers, who couldn't help but see and hear what was going on. And the manager said to them, "You know, there's a man here tonight, ladies and gentlemen, who doesn't know who he is." Now, big names can often prove rather disappointing. But the people who met Jesus clearly respected him. And they came out in droves to hear him speak. But who did they think he was? Well, Jesus asked his disciples that question one day. Here it is in verse 27. Jesus and his disciples, they went to the villages around Caesarea Philippi. That's well up near the source of the Jordan. And on the way, he asked them, "Who do people say that I am?" And so they talked among themselves, and they came up with one or two answers, and they replied, some say John the Baptist, others say Elijah, and still others, well, one of the prophets. To the people, he was a big name, big enough to be put in the same bracket as Elijah and of John the Baptist. And because they linked him with those people, they obviously saw Jesus, therefore, not as an establishment religious leader who would say all the right things, the kind of things you would expect a religious leader to say. No, people came and they listened to him carefully because he said things how they were. And he knew people as we are. I find when I pray privately and ask for God's forgiveness for something, I feel both uncomfortable and comfortable at the same time. I feel uncomfortable because he knows things about me that nobody else does. And yet comfortable as well because I know that he never gives up on me, however much he knows of what I'm really like. Reading these gospel records about Jesus, that seems to be the experience of many of the people that he encountered, whether privately, individually, or in public. And that's why they put his name up there with the likes of Elijah and John the Baptist. But then Jesus said in verse 29, we read, but what about you? He asked the disciples, who do you say I am? And it's just a little reminder tonight that we can't get away with just discussing religion and Christianity all our life. You know, some people think this and other people think that. Because at some point we will get a direct personal question. And it will come, as it were, from Jesus Christ. Who do you think I am? Anyway, Peter gave his reply and he said, you are the Christ. And then comes perhaps the surprise in verse 30 that we've had so far. Jesus warned them not to tell anybody about him. Now, what does that tell us? Well, I think it tells us, first of all, that it was true. What Peter had said was true, that he was the Christ. Otherwise, Jesus would have put him right. He was never afraid to do that, as we look down the page. It also tells us, secondly, that being the Christ or the Messiah was a bigger name than John the Baptist. Now, quite a lot of people today rate Jesus highly. He's a great teacher, he's a prophet, etc. In other words, like public opinion then, he is one of several very big names. But Peter was saying, no, you're not one of several. You are the one. You are the one we've been waiting centuries for, the one who will do God's work as it has never been done before. Now, at that moment, even Peter probably had no idea exactly who was standing next to him. But as we read through the New Testament, we find that all those writers that are included there, they consistently give the same message, that he, Jesus Christ, was with God and he was God. I read one recent comment about Jesus, and it said, God did not send a subordinate to redeem us. He chose to do it himself. So it tells us that he was a bigger name than John the Baptist. And then thirdly, it tells us that he was dynamite. Because it explains verse 30 to know that in the contemporary situation where the Romans are a very dominant occupying power, the word Christ, the word Messiah, was loaded for the people of the time with all the wrong kind of connotations. It carried massive nationalistic overtones. And Jesus was concerned when he heard it said, not that he was wrong, but what it meant to so many people around the place. Jesus was not that kind of Messiah, destined to be a popular political or military national hero. And to be heralded as such would misrepresent what he had really been sent to achieve. Now, we're very used to big names, big celebrities like Kate Winslet, performing as she did recently at the Gold Globe Awards. Big money earners like the Brazilian footballer Kaká with £100 million prize tag for his skills. Interestingly, you may have seen this sporting a I belong to Jesus t-shirt very clearly in the television, suggesting he rates Jesus a greater authority and a bigger name than himself. Now, when I see that, I admire him for that. Also secretly, I also fear for him. And then talking about big names, there's of course Barack Obama, for whom we are committed to pray, and we have done tonight. But Jesus Christ is described in Scripture as the name above all names. The name above all names. But we are drawn to him not only because of any title that he was given, but also because we need him. And that's where we move on to see what he did. And what he did, Jesus did on the big stage, verses 31 to 33. I was with some of the younger generation of children in our family shopping in Hamleys, and they had their Christmas present money ready to spend, and of course that is a very serious affair. And one was recommending that her brother bought a Kung Fu Panda, which is very popular at the moment. But her brother was not so easily persuaded, because you could see in his mind he was comparing this particular toy with other toys around the store. And after a pause, he voiced his concern. He said, I don't think I will buy that because he doesn't do anything. Now, unlike that particular version of the Kung Fu Panda, Jesus is worth everything to us because not only of what he did, but what only he could do. And following Peter's inspired outburst, immediately he decides to tell his disciples what to expect of this Messiah. Although they couldn't envisage this, Peter was appalled at the idea that he would be walking onto the most famous stage in history. The whole notion of Christianity and the stage, bringing those together, can make us feel quite nervous. One critic described what he termed American Christianity as, he said, the merging of the entertainment business with faith. Now, if we know anything about American Christianity, we'll know he's generalizing big time. But what he disliked is sadly true far beyond the shores of America. But to put our minds at rest, the stage we associate with Jesus is a very far cry from anything like that. And it is a drama that has held the attention of people ever since. Jesus, verse 31, began to teach the disciples that the Son of Man must suffer many things and be rejected by the elders, chief priests, and teachers of the law, and that he must be killed and after 3 days rise again. Front stage, this drama was as miserable and agonizing as it gets. He was saying that he himself was going to be cruelly put to death. Said he wouldn't die a hero, or disillusioned, or in poverty. He would die rejected. The political leaders, they feared him, and he was hated by the religious authorities who stirred up the crowd to shout for him to be crucified. So his stage, it was dark, and it was dirty, and it was horrible. But backstage, the drama told a different story. And the key word here is must. The Son of Man must suffer many things. The Son of Man was a term that he used about himself, which could be interpreted as having divine authority, but without the political associations. The Son of Man must suffer. That was his mission. He would deliberately take on himself all the punishment that the rest of us deserved. And having died like that, he would rise again the third day, conclusive proof that what he had done was a victory. Now, when we're thinking of people of other faiths or other nationalities or cultures, we should never be divided as friends. But we're certainly divided in faith from those who cannot accept Jesus' death on the cross. The words of a recognized Muslim scholar when he said, the cross is the one irreducible fact separating Christianity and Islam. A fact, he said, which is in reality placed there providentially to prevent a mingling of the two religions. Well, he says that because Muslims don't believe that Jesus actually died on the cross. But now compare that with the Christian writer Jim Packer. He wrote, "There are many people today who admire Jesus, and they seek to imitate Jesus, who have never truly seen him. Because no one truly sees Jesus until he sees the cross and comes to know its meaning." As human beings, it doesn't matter whatever our background is, as human beings, we can't do without Jesus Christ. And we can't do without his cross. Through it, we have the forgiveness of sins. Through it, we have peace with God. Through it, we can begin a new life in the Spirit. Without the cross, we are lost completely. And with the cross, we are saved completely. And the cost of what Jesus did for us on that cross was absolutely free. And so we move on to what Jesus requires. And what he requires is a very big ask. And there it is again in front of us at verse 34. "If anybody would come up after me," said Jesus, "he must deny himself and take up his cross and follow me." In fact, in some ways, it can be reduced down even more briefly than that into just two words. Follow me. We are called to give our allegiance not to a cause, not to a structure or a system, not to some new culture, not to a project. We are called to follow Jesus Christ. But that is a big ask. On what basis would we ever decide to take such a step? Well, the answer is on the basis of who he is and what he has done. Following Jesus is not a hopeful shot in the dark, saying, "Well, I've tried everything else and I might as well try this one." No, it's not that. We have every reason to trust him and every reason to need him. And Jesus says, "Follow me." But to follow Jesus is not to move off again broadly in the same direction. And the rest of the sentence explains the difference. Just as Jesus spoke very plainly about going to his death, so he then speaks very plainly about what it means to follow him, plainly and briefly. There is no long appendix as an attachment. It is all here within one simple sentence. "If anybody will come after me, he, she must deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me." What does it mean to deny ourselves? The supplement Body and Soul, which comes with the Times newspaper every weekend, guesses that after Christmas, many people will feel less good about themselves. And so the therapists are brought in to tell readers, "Yes, you really can." That's the headline. "Yes, you really can drink less alcohol, get back in shape, and be more confident." And the advice that they give, by and large, is sensible enough. We're not called by Jesus to let ourselves go, but we are called by Jesus Christ. We're called away from focusing all our targets and all our ambitions on me, on myself. Already we may have considered that looking after number one is not that satisfying after all. We know we need enough money to live on, whatever that means. But aiming for more and more luxury, more holidays, more houses, well, inside many of us, we have moments when we're not sold on that as a complete way of life. But perhaps we haven't changed because we don't know what alternative there is. And when Jesus speaks here, he's not introducing self-denial for its own sake. This is denying ourselves in order to follow Jesus Christ. So that's part of it, to put down self. And the other part is to take up the cross. A Christian friend of mine asked a non-believing colleague how she thought Christianity might become more relevant. And she replied quite immediately, she said, "It's for Christians to get their heads above the parapet, to say what they believe, and to speak out on what they think is important. And she added, it's all too vague and wishy-washy. And yet, when you look at Jesus Christ, you see that Jesus wasn't at all vague and wishy-washy. In any case, what's the point of a faith like that? Anything wishy-washy has nothing to do with Jesus. And he used here the word cross. Now, thinking about the death of Jesus, is he meaning we all have to go out and to die for him? It's a fair question given the kind of fundamentalism in the world that encourages people to become martyrs. Our mind inevitably goes to those horrific videos of young men and women giving their final speeches before suicide bombings. I've just finished reading a book called The Reluctant Fundamentalist, which was shortlisted for the 2007 Booker Prize. And just reading that, it gave me a feel for those who wanted to protest against what they see as Western culture and its perceived supremacy. But it gave me no reason for martyrdom as a response. And when we look at Jesus Christ and we read through these Gospels here, we realize that with Jesus there is never a call to violence. There is never a call to go out and to get killed. But there is a call to be willing to follow Christ seriously. And that means making sacrifices, not covering our backs all the time. Jesus didn't come with the message that if we follow him, we'll have an easy life, with everything happening exactly as we would like it to. Monty Barker, the psychiatrist, said that some approach Christianity, and I quote, with the expectation of being offered solutions to all personal problems. But Jesus didn't speak like that. And the poet T.S. Eliot wrote that the gospel is a demanding message which calls us to a way of life, and here I quote him specifically, costing not less than everything. It's not a soft option. Jesus was impressing on us that his call is a tough one. That's why he said, take up the cross. Simon Murray, a former foreign legionnaire and solo Arctic explorer, was explaining on Desert Island Discs that to be tough, he said, does not mean aggressive, but it does mean resilience. It's a big ask, but that is what Jesus Christ requires of us. And so we come to the last point. What about his claims as we come to the end of this passage, verses 35 to 38? And with his claims, he gives us a couple of very big questions to think about. The rationale behind the big ask is this: that there is no point in pussyfooting around. Because as Jesus says in verse 35, whoever wants to save his life will lose it. But whoever loses his life for me and for the gospel will save it. Now that may defy logic, but we simply don't find life by hanging on to it, but by losing it, by giving up our own ambitions in order to live for Christ. We imagine we must be losing out by doing that, but we are following Jesus, who accepts us when we know we're unacceptable. He frees us from what traps us, and he offers us a life of adventure and service where nothing is deemed impossible. And I have to say that the people who I secretly admire the most are those who have made big steps for Jesus Christ outside their comfort zone. We have a big choice to make. Sarah was talking about the choice that confronted her a few years back. Either we give our entire allegiance to Christ and what he's all about, or we give our allegiance to the world and what that's all about. And he sets us two big questions to consider. It is so easy to concentrate on today and tomorrow. We think to ourselves, well, I won't think too far ahead. I'll just keep my head down and I'll press on. But sometimes we need to look up and to ask the big questions about life, about our life. And we ask them this time knowing what offer Jesus has made. Now, it's a fact that we learn more probably from our struggles than from our successes. For example, back in September, when the financial crisis began to bite, a newspaper journalist wrote, "We've learnt the hard way that you can't have something for nothing." But about this credit crunch and how it affects us, perhaps it's a very serious matter for some of us. But we know it doesn't provide all the answers to life. But possibly we are discovering that it does raise some very big questions about life. They're questions that have always been there, but perhaps we haven't felt the need to face them until now. Verse 36, "What good is it for a person to gain the whole world and yet forfeit their soul?" That kind of question. How can we get our minds around these big questions? One way many have found it valuable is to book into the next Christianity Explored course. And as you've probably seen as you look down the page you've got in front of you, there is one coming up very soon. It doesn't matter where we're coming from, we probably have got some questions to sort out. One man who later became an Oxford professor had, in those early days, some important intellectual questions, and this is what he said. "Trying to get everything straight in my mind was not especially easy. Yet it forced me to wrestle with the question of how to do intellectual justice to Christ. He demanded to be understood to the limits of my ability. The conclusions that I reached were not startling. Others had reached them long before me. And they can be thought of as representing the settled common mind of Christians down the ages. But it was important for me to reach these conclusions for myself, rather than just passively accept what others had told me." For others, as we're wondering how we're going to deal with these questions, it means being prepared to review our version of Christianity as we've thought it to be so far. Coming from a Christian background, as I have, I know just how easy it is to slip into the Christian faith because it's familiar. Or we like reading lessons or playing the music. It becomes a spiritual social network that we find fulfills some of our personal needs. And as one friend put it, there is a form of being a Christian where we can ease in and perhaps ease out again. So it's a good chance now to review it. And maybe coming to a course like Christianity Explored will help us to do that. Because that is not what Jesus talked about here. We may look and decide that the turn we took towards Christ was a half turn or a three-quarters turn, but not a full turn. And so, in the end, it is about the end. "Whoever loses his life for me and the gospel," said Jesus, "will save it." Taking each day as it comes, it's only good advice up to a point. It may help us to cope, but it doesn't help us to answer the questions that Jesus has put before us. We may never, therefore, accept the invitation Jesus has given us. We will have taken the soft option, perhaps. Our faith, if we have one, will be mild and modest, rather private, and for many, looking from the outside, appear quite dull and unappetizing. But Jesus encouraged us to take a different line. He says we want to take the view that prompts us to ask the big questions as to where we will be in the end. "Whoever wants to save his life will lose it. What good is it if a man gains the whole world and yet forfeits his soul? The Son of Man, the one who died on that cross, on that very big stage. He is the Son of Man who sees us in the end. When we have stood for him, when we have taken risks for him, when we have set out to make our greatest achievements for him, when we have served others for him, when he knows it has been perhaps dangerous or shameful for us to do that. And when he sees that, he will not be ashamed of us on that day. But what happens in the end will mean accepting the tough call now. And so let us make that the subject of a quiet moment of our prayers. As we sit, let's bow our heads. We never know where our minds are going to take us when we leave this room tonight, but we just want to make sure that we hear the tough call of Jesus Christ. If anybody would come after me, he, she must deny himself, herself, take up the cross, and follow me. And so, Lord, we hear your call. Help us to take it seriously, to explore it urgently, and to have the courage and trust to respond to it wholeheartedly. Thank you, Lord Jesus Christ. Amen.